We are talking today with an extraordinary young mom. When her husband is unjustly convicted of child abuse and their newborn son is taken away from her, she decides to fight injustice by going to law school and fighting for her husband and people like him. Join us today on Fostering the Future.
Welcome to the Fostering the Future podcast, a show about all things child welfare, dependency, adoption, and foster care. Here are your hosts, veterans in the world of child welfare, Jack and Kat.
We believe that every human has incredible and equal value regardless of what side of the courtroom we sit on. We hope that everyone feels welcome and accepted here on Fostering the Future.
Make sure you follow us on Facebook or Instagram as Fostering the Future Podcast, or check us out on our website at fosteringthefuturepodcast.org. This is Jack, and today I am chatting with Haley from Arizona because we're going to hear about her experience with Abuse of Power by DCS. Thank you for joining me today, Haley.
Thank you for having me.
Haley, I can't wait to get into your story, but can you start us off by telling us a little bit about your family?
Yeah, so I am married to my husband. We've been married for 7 years. His name is Gary Worrell. And we met when we were about 10 years old at church, our local church. That our
parents Stop! 10 years old?
10 years
oh
old.
Oh my gosh.
Yep. We met at church there's not very many. So it was a little small town. His family moved around a lot, but they ended up in Prescott. And so we met when we were like 10. We are a year age difference. Well, like a year and a half. And so he was up in like the youth group and I was up in like the kid down in the kids' church still. And so my parents, they were the youth leaders. So I would like stalk him gently like when they were leaving the youth group. I was like obsessed with him. Did not know I existed because I didn't know how to brush my hair or like anything at that point in time. Finally, when I got to move up there in sixth grade, so like a year later, and learned how to brush my hair and, you know, look like presentable. we started talking, became friends. And then when we were 13, we started dating, and it's kind of like back and forth within that time. We just became best friends till we were 18. We were best friends. Right when we were 18 was the last time that we had like really, I was a senior in high school. I was about to graduate. He had just graduated and we got back together for like the final time and proposed to me a couple months later, like maybe 6 months later. And then we got engaged, and then I got pregnant with our first son, Clayton, who's 7 now. And then we got married 4.5 months later is when all this started to happen. But during and in the middle of that time, I got pregnant again. And so we have a younger son, Daniel, who's 4.
Everything that went down happened 4 months after you got married or after you had Clayton?
After we had Clayton, which was, let's see. We got married in March of 2017, and I had Clayton in June of 2017. And then November of 2017 is when everything started happening. So he was 4.5 months old.
You know, I didn't meet my husband until we were in our late 20s. You basically got like a 15, 20 year jump on people who meet in their 20s and get married. Like a lot of that pretense of who are you and what do I really know about you is gone because you kind of grew up together.
It doesn't happen often. And I'm so glad it did because, I mean, especially when you think of coming into situations like with the DCS system and stuff, the kind of trust and like stability and like foundation that you have before going through stuff like that. And I mean, we were already so young, 19 and 20, without having had that solid foundation. Like even people with solid foundations, it's hard, you know, and so having that like basis of like a really like a lifetime of friendship before was definitely like super helpful.
Yeah, I think sometimes, like, when I hear these stories, I always wonder if you're the wife or if you're the husband, do you ever wonder, like, is it possible that my spouse could have done this and I didn't know? Because, like, you can know someone to their core, but still, like, you've got to always think, is someone capable of doing something in a moment where they're stressed? Certainly, if you were dating on and off through, like, high school and even middle school, you've probably seen the worst of.
Very much so. We both see every single angle and unpleasant angle, good angle, yeah. Seen all of that, you know. So as soon as this happened, and they immediately at the hospital were questioning, like, you think your husband could have done this? And I'm like, absolutely not. Like, not a chance. Not a chance. This boy doesn't have a frustrated bone in his body.
As a spouse, you get to see how they react when they're stressed. You're the person they let their guard down with. So if they were ever to get super loud or super angry or aggressive or even like hitting a wall, you would know. Like, if anybody would know, you would know. I always wonder that, though. Like, if I was in that position, would there be moments where I would doubt him? I don't know how I would feel in that situation. It's like the worst thing to ever happen. Because it's the worst nightmare, let's start talking about it. If you could kind of walk me through how you came to this place where the engine started rolling.
Okay, so it was in November of 2017. It was actually like end of October. We went on a vacation to Kentucky to visit his family, my husband's family, for his brother's wedding. Clayton was like 4 months old. And so by the time we got back on November 11th is when we flew back. So we had like one night's sleep. Everything was fine. We went over to my parents' house and my grandparents' house, who live really close by, to visit with them since we had just gotten back. Did laundry, stuff like that, over at my mom's because we had to pay for laundry at our apartment. So we were just doing all of that. We went and grabbed Clayton from my grandparents' house. We were watching him while we did laundry. Went back to our apartment. Everything fine. Went to sleep. Woke up in the morning. Gary went to go get Clayton changed from his jammies into his like regular clothes. And he was like, babe, I think something's wrong with his arm. And so I run in there. I was making a bottle. He was like changing him and his arm was like a little bit swollen. It wasn't red or anything, but you could tell it was puffed up. And he wasn't like crying or anything, but when we would go to move his arm, he would start crying. And so we just kept him in that onesie and we immediately called my mom's best friend, who was a nurse, and she worked in labor and delivery. She was our labor delivery nurse. And we're like, we don't know what to do. Like, it's a Sunday, so pediatrician is closed right now, but the hospital is literally like 2 minutes away from us, so we can go there if we need to. And she was like, no, I think just give it Tylenol, give him some little baby Tylenol and just like watch it, see what happens. The fact that we couldn't move it without him crying, we were like, let's just take him in just to be safe. And so we packed up a diaper bag. I mean, not even enough formula to be there for like 2 hours, just figured that that was gonna be it. Little backstory, since he was born, he had been failure to thrive at the pediatrician's office. So every week, literally every week, and then towards the last couple of the last month or so, it was like every 2 weeks, we were taking him to the pediatrician to check his weight. I originally was trying to breastfeed the whole time. It didn't seem like he was getting much. I was like severely low of vitamin D, like dangerously low.
Then, I mean, I feel like I'm in Groundhog Day. I'm not a doctor and I already know what we're looking at here, but like, how do these doctors not know?
I know. And see, like going back, we were so young. We had no idea. The doctor didn't tell us to give vitamin D to supplements, like nothing. She knew that he was not gaining the proper weight. We were like, maybe we should supplement with formula. And she's like, no, breast is best. You need to keep breastfeeding. And we're like, okay. Well, it got towards like end of month three, beginning of month four. And I'm like, we're going to supplement. And so we started supplementing. The last pediatrician appointment that we had, he actually started gaining weight. And I'm like, great. We started feeding him vitamin D enriched formula. He started gaining weight, started doing good. And then by the time we got back, he was almost, for a whole like week, he was on formula. Going back, we were driving to the hospital and we get there and they check us into the emergency room and they're like asking us what's going on. We said, we don't really know. There's nothing that's happened, but his arm is a little swollen. And so we wanted to take him in. So they like immediately like skip the line, take us back. A doctor comes in almost immediately, like within 5 minutes, and says, that arm is broken. I know one of you did it. So I'm calling the cops and I'm calling DCS.
Did they already do x-rays?
No.
So without x-rays, he says, that arm is broken and I'm calling the police.
So we sit in there and then we wait for the x-rays. About the time that someone comes in for an x-rays, we see the police officers start walking around and just kind of like waiting out. And so they get us all in our like protective x-ray gear thing. They bring the x-ray machine in there. Clayton is like laughing and giggling, moving around all of his legs, moving around all of his arms. And they do the x-ray and they do a full body one. And they find 4 healing rib fractures at different various stages of healing and an arm fracture, which is where his swollenness was. So they immediately get an officer in there that turned out to be a neighbor of my parents that knew me. So they had to remove themselves and get a new officer. And so we had to wait for that to happen. And then a DCS employee investigator came kind of during that time and was talking to us. They had like someone by our door the whole time. We couldn't be alone with him, I guess. Even in the doctor's notes of these things, the doctor like comments on about how happy and healthy he looks and how he's smiling and giggling and laughing with his parents, all this stuff. The DCS worker walks in and he looks like a college student, like on spring break. He has sweatpants on and a bedazzled backpack, and he is chewing on his little necklace lanyard thing that says DCS worker. And he's like, "How y'all doing today?" Obviously not great. Our son is hurt. We don't know what happened. Nobody's answering our questions. And so we were thinking how this could have happened. We were talking to the nurses, doctors. The only thing that had ever possibly could have caused it was that he had rolled off the changing table a month and a half prior. But we took him to the doctor on his day, the pediatrician day that we did every week. And she checked him out. She said he was fine. That was like a month prior. So that could have been something that we thought maybe were the ribs, but we had no idea with the arms. Like, we had been there the whole time. It wasn't like that when we went to bed. Somehow in the middle of the night, it was there. And we slept, like, he had a bassinet on the side of our bed. We were both in the room the whole entire time. Like, if one of us was doing something,
you would know.
You would know. And our apartment is very, very small. Even you could go in the other side of the apartment, like the force that it would cause to break a baby's bones would have caused crying. And not one of us, neither one of us heard crying. And we're like light sleepers. So no way.
So which metabolic bone disease does it turn out that Clayton has?
Vitamin D deficiency, infantile rickets. Me and him both just got diagnosed with EDS. We think mainly big contributing thing was the
rickets. So I don't understand why doctors aren't paying closer attention to vitamin D deficiency in moms, because every single one of these parents have had vitamin D deficiency. The babies, like, I'm going to literally put this child on vitamin D because I notice he's deficient, but we're just going to pretend that that's not a contributing factor to the bones. I'm sure we'll get here, but I'm like dying of curiosity. Did you ever have like a specialist look at the x-rays and determine if they were even fractures or if they were just the cracks? Just cracks?
Yes.
These freaking moron doctors, where are they getting them from? And they didn't do any like tests, no blood work to they immediately, and didn't even say, "Hey, is there someone else who watches the kid?" Immediately it's you or your husband.
Yeah. Immediately. I don't think I was ever like a suspect. They like immediately went after him. Like, they didn't ask me any questions about it. It was all him, which when he was 18 years old, right before we got back together, he got in trouble for sleeping with his underage girlfriend, who is 16 years old. And he, instead of getting a sexual misconduct with a minor charge, they pled it down to child abuse. So I'm thinking.
And how old was he at the time?
18.
So he was 18. His girlfriend was 16. Not a great situation, but I'm not sure how that makes someone a child abuser.
No. And see, they pled it down so he wouldn't be a sex offender, because the parents had testified like they had been together. It was like before. It was fine. They were okay with it. That's
so the parents were okay with it?
Yeah. That was a whole other story of a vindictive grandmother that wanted restitution money for the trauma that she experienced. But
there's something on his record, they're immediately pointing him out, which is so unfair.
Specifically child abuse, I think they might have saw that and said, "That's our person," without even looking at what was actually the case. You know?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. So it was actually termed child abuse.
Yes. The charge was pled down to child abuse so that he wouldn't have to do any of the like sex offender registry kind of things. It was pled down to that. He didn't get any jail time for it or anything like that. But that was part of the deal, was pleading it down to child abuse. Of course, that's a really good deal when you're 18 and that happens. We had no idea how it would affect something later, because nobody expects this kind of stuff to happen. But I'm thinking that once the police officer got there and did his little search to see if any of us had felonies and saw that, that is what put their tunnel vision on immediately, you know?
Yeah.
Because all they see is the charge name. They don't see the story.
And the crazy thing about that is, like, I mean, I think in some states, like, that age difference doesn't even count, because, like, if we're talking about like an 18 year old with like a 12 year old or an 8 year old, that's a different story. But you have two people who are in their late teens dating. If my son was dating someone 2 years younger, I would probably be on him quite a bit to like make sure that. Like, we're not talking about a monster. We're talking about a guy who had a girlfriend 2 years younger. In the grand scheme of things, he was a kid. Yeah. He was a kid. 18 is a kid. His brain is not finished developing. And for someone to consider that a play into this is actually enraging and really unfair. So police show up. They're immediately questioning him. Like, what kind of happens after that?
So we were in the room together with a police officer, a police detective, and then the DCS officer investigator person. We were in the room. They kind of just like generic questions, and then they separated us. We got there at the hospital at like 7 a.m. This probably didn't start happening, the interrogations, until maybe somewhere around noon, kind of around that time. It was a couple hours later because they had to get that new detective in. They first separated us. So starting at noon, they separated us and they questioned me first. They had him go sit in another room alone. And then they had me sit in there with Clayton. They wouldn't let any like family come in to like be with us or sit with us. My grandparents were waiting in the waiting room, just waiting there. My parents were actually on vacation, so it was just my grandparents that was able to be there.
And you guys were 19 and 20.
Yeah.
I hate that they make you feel like you don't have rights in these situations just because of their quote authority with the state. And especially you're not even 21 yet. You absolutely should have had someone older who could have advocated for you and made sure that your rights were being protected. Your age made you such a target.
See, like looking back now, especially being in law school, so many things that they did was so wrong. And like, which it's bad looking back and thinking about what you could have done differently because you can't change. But I mean, to other people, like immediately when I posted some videos on TikTok and stuff, everybody in the comments was like, you should have asked for an attorney. You should have asked for an attorney. I'm like, thank you. I was 19 and we had no idea.
You don't know. And when someone who looks like a cop tells you to do something or what you're allowed to do, you just do it.
Oh, we didn't do anything. So, of course, we're going to talk to them to try to get them to realize we didn't do anything. We have nothing to hide. We will talk to them, you know. And so they talked to me for, I don't know, probably like a good hour and a half, 2 hours. They obviously weren't getting there. They had me repeat the same thing like over and over again, I think trying to get me to slip up. They kept going in between the day that he fell off of the changing table and asking me questions about that to that night and when we woke up and when we found that his arm was swollen. And so they kept doing it back and forth. And that's actually something they ended up using in his trial. And you could tell in the recording that they were like asking me questions about this and then asking me questions about this.
They were trying to confuse you to get you to mix up your story, talking about two different incidents.
Yep. And so I had said I had woke up. I thought they were talking about that day. They were talking about the night of the changing table. And so I'd said I had woke up and I was making a bottle. Then I came in. And so they used it. And when Gary said she was making a bottle and I told her that, hey, you should come in, he was like, well, your wife said something differently and used it, even though I had said that same thing about the first five times they asked me. But after they kept switching up the days, this is what day we're talking about. Oh, okay, what happened on this day again? Oh, no, what happened on this day? And it's like, I was all mixed up. So I actually had to like testify about why that was confusing and had them listen to the interrogation tape with him asking me all these different questions, because that's basically what they used to like find me not credible because I changed up my story. It wasn't that at all. It was just switching 2 days because they were questioning me about the different ones. So that went on for like around 2 hours. Then they finally let me go out to sit with my grandparents. Probably like an hour before that, we had already been in there for like 5 or 6 hours. They wouldn't let any either of us leave to go get more formula. And so my grandparents had to go into our apartment, get formula and bring it. And they had to give it to a nurse who brought it in. They wouldn't let us leave, which is technically when Miranda is supposed to be read, but none of that happened. Then they switched us at that point. And like, I just saw him while we were passing each other. They told us not to talk to each other, not to look at each other. So we passed each other going in while he was coming into the room with the detectives and cops and Clayton. And then I went out to the waiting room area with my grandparents while they interrogated him for the next 2 hours. So I was sitting out there just crying the whole time, just not knowing what was happening. Nobody would update us. I'll share my perspective first, and then I'll share what happened with him in the interrogation room, since I've listened to it in full. I was sitting out there, kept asking, any updates, any updates. They wouldn't give updates. Finally, after about like 2.5, 3 hours, it was like 8 o'clock at night. We see the DCS investigator walk out. And so we get up and we're like, what is happening? And he starts laughing and he says, your husband's getting booked. And we're like, what? And he's like, yeah, your husband's getting booked. He did it. He hurt your kid. And we're taking him. I'm like, there's no way.
Why would he laugh? It's like they're making it into a game or a challenge rather than like someone's life.
That's exactly what it is. I actually wrote a paper, a research paper on police interrogation tactics, and it's called the interrogation game. So that's exactly what it is. It's just it's like a game to them, you know, and they have no rules that they have to follow, or very few. We start walking back with him and the detective is standing there. And he starts telling us about how my husband said that he took Clayton and he threw him across the room and he hit the wall. And that is how he broke his arm. And he, for the ribs, he pulled him off the changing table and like slammed him on the ground. That is what he told us. And we're like, there's no way, not even a chance. Can we talk to him? And they're like, no, he's gone. We already took him. You don't get to talk to him. He's like, but you can go say goodbye to your son before the foster parents come and take him. I'm like, you're not going to give him to me? He's like, no, not until we find out your involvement or how much you knew. I'm like, okay. So I go in.
So it wasn't even like, is there any family members that he could stay with or someone that could stay with you and do a safety plan? Immediately, they wanted the child in foster care.
Yeah. Okay. And the foster parents were already at the hospital ready to take him. And they let me give him a kiss and just hold him for like a minute. And then I had to give him to the doctors and they took him into a different room where the foster parents were. And so I walked out of there that night without him or my husband and back to our car. And I decided I was going to stay at my grandparents' house. Well, actually, she decided for me because she didn't want me being alone. But I had to pick up our dog who was stuck in the crate for like 12 hours. The officer, the detective, he like asked me if he could come take pictures around the house and like gather evidence. I was like, yeah, I guess like you've already
you did nothing wrong. And you're thinking like, whatever,
and you've already taken everything from me. Go ahead. Like, I don't care what you do. Just whatever. And so he followed me back. He took pictures of everything, which, of course, the house was a mess. We had just got back from our vacation. My dog was just, there was poop everywhere in her freaking kennel because she'd been in there for 12 hours. But he went around mostly and took pictures of the nursery and then of the bassinet that he sleeps in our room, and was like, had measuring tapes and stuff, from the changing table to the floor, different stuff like that. Backwards rewind into the actual interrogation that was happening with my husband, that was recorded and was played at trial. Specifically his criminal trial, they didn't play it at the severance trial, but they had like transcripts of it. Starts the same way mine does. It's very friendly. You know, they start using these tactics. Like, I'm just trying to get to the truth, bud. Like, no worries. Like, just a conversation. And as it goes on, and he's saying over and over again, and like one of the things that the attorney at his criminal trial did when the detective was on the stand was asking him to read every single time that he said, I didn't do it, or I would never hurt my son, or anything like that. And it was like 38 times throughout this conversation. And every time he would go to say, I didn't do it, he would get interrupted by the detective saying, man up, and like screaming at him to man up. And it comes to like the last 15 minutes left of the recording. But right before that, there's 10 minutes that there's nothing, that it just turns off. And my husband still to this day, he doesn't know what happened. He could have went out and taken a break or what. Like, he does not remember like at all. But the tape comes back on after 10 minutes of no recording, and my husband's crying.
They were saying something to him.
Yeah. And then the officer goes, not verbatim, I don't remember verbatim, but he goes something like, what did we just talk about? It's either you or your wife that is going down for this. A jury is going to see that either you or your wife did it. You two are the main caretakers. So this is going to go in front of a jury, and one of you is going to prison. So what do you want it to be? And he said, you're asking me to go to prison for something that I didn't do. And he said, come on, bud, we all know that you did it. Be a man, man up. Don't you want your wife and son to go home safe? And he said, you don't get it. And he said something like, I already have a charge. So if I say that I did this, I'm going to go away for a long time. Like, it's not just going to be little. It's going to be a long time. He just kept saying, man up over and over again. Don't you want your wife and son to go home safe? If we don't get to this bottom of this right now, we're taking your kids. So what do you want? What do you want? And they just kept saying over and over again, we're going to take the kid. We're going to take the kid, or your wife is going to prison, over and over again. So he said, fine, I did it. And they said, okay, you got to tell me how you did it. And he said, I don't remember. And the detective said, well, okay, I think for the ribs, I think that you pulled him off of the changing table. And he said, okay. He said, I think you were frustrated and you just pulled him off. And he said, okay. He said, no, I'm going to need you to tell me what you did. And he said, okay, I got frustrated and I pulled him off, repeating literally exactly what the detective said. And then he goes, okay, what about the arm? And he said, I don't know. I don't remember. And he said, what, do you black out or something? And he's like, I don't know. I guess. You can tell like he's talking slow and like just complete like defeat, you know? They said, okay, well, I think that you got frustrated with him and you pushed down his arm so hard you broke it. And he goes, okay. He said, I'm going to need you to tell me what you did. And he said, yeah, I got frustrated and I pushed down his arm and I heard it pop. I heard it pop has been used in every single court document in everything by the state. And especially was repeated to the jury over and over and over again, because it's a detail that they didn't feed him. Exactly. They said, and you broke it. And he said, and I heard it pop. But hearing someone say that they heard a pop when they pushed down the child's arm is so emotionally, people hear that and it's over, you know, and they forget the last couple of minutes where they're just feeding him details after he said no so many times, even with testimony from doctors that child's bones at that age don't even pop. They don't even make popping sounds because they're rubber. They don't even make popping sounds. You know?
Also, it's not a fracture. It's a freaking crack, yeah. You dumbasses.
Yeah. They handcuffed him. He said they handcuffed him. They let him kiss Clayton on the forehead and took him out. And the next time, it was like 4 or 5 days later, is when he finally got to call from the jail. And the first thing that he said, well, I was like, what the hell happened? And he said, are you and Clayton safe?
Hang in there, guys. The rest of the story continues in the next episode.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you subscribe and follow us on social. We hope that you join us again next time and keep on fostering the future.